Tomer had no news for them when they returned to their quarters, no appointment with the Perator or his ministers to discuss the possibility of Adumar's entry into the New Republic, no revised orders from intelligence. They accepted a dinner invitation at the lavish home of Kartan's Minister of Trade, yet the politician had no interest in discussing trade. He wanted to hear nothing but tales of Wedge's exploits. Returning to the city's streets, the pilots found that it had grown dark and cool outside, and now the streets were filled with shadowy figures and the occasional wheeled transport. Wedge checked the chrono in his pocket, and the local time indicated it was less than a half hour of midnight.
"I'm going to leave you now," he said.
Tycho nodded. "Keep your eyes open, Wedge.
We can't be sure there aren't duelists out there who want to kill you honorably."
At this time of night, the plaza where they'd made first landfall on Adumar was nearly empty. Ahead, there was a slender silhouette, waiting. When Wedge was a dozen meters away, he slowed, sure that he should not call Yella's true name, but not certain as to what sort of greeting was appropriate. He said, "May I approach?"
"You may."
Yella lowered the hood of her cloak as he reached her, and moonlight fell full on her face. She extended her hands. He took them, then stood at a loss for words. She shrugged.
"Listen, Wedge, I can be here, but not for long. What do you need?"
He sighed.
"Duty first. How long has the New Republic really been aware of Adumar?"
"You don't know?"
5 or 6 months, she said.
"Intelligence discovered that someone was recruiting computer slicers for hire, to do interfaces between a new set of computer protocols and New Republic and Imperial standards. Intelligence got interested, put together an identity for me as a Corellian slicer, and dropped me on one of the worlds where they were hiring."
"So what's all this about a mapping ship finding Adumar, and suddenly they want our pilots as diplomats?"
"That's all true, but it's only part of the story. I was here for a few weeks and figured out that Adumari scout ships had gotten far enough out to discover human-occupied worlds. They determined that there were two big power hubs, the New Republic and the Empire, and they wanted to learn everything they could before getting in contact with either one. But the mapping ship incident did happen, and it sort of accelerated their plans."
"Well, here's an important one. What sort of arrangements am I going to be able to make with them if they're not a united world? I can't do much more than open up diplomatic relations and persuade them that the imps are bad."
"That's exactly what you're supposed to do. Other forces are working on the Perator of Kartan to persuade him to enter into a world government."
She gave him a brief smile.
"Wedge, is that it? I need to get back to my quarters."
"I suppose so."
Then a wave of something like doubt hit him.
"No, that's not it. Listen, I haven't seen you in months, and now that we've talked, I still feel as though I haven't seen you. What's going on?"
"I can't help you with that, Wedge."
"Yella, have we stopped being friends?"
She was silent a long moment.
"I suppose we have."
Wedge felt his breath catch.
"When did that happen? How did it happen?"
"It's not you, Wedge, it's me."
Her mask of serenity slipped, leaving her expression tired, even dismayed.
"I just had another direction to go. You're not there."
She put her hood up. Suddenly he could no longer see her features.
"I have to go," she said,
and turned away.
Wedge stood there and watched her fade into the darkness of the plaza's shadowy edges. It occurred to him that this departure was just the image, the reflection of something that must have happened long ago. He just didn't remember when. And the mystery of it was like a little stony knot of pain next to his heart.
By the time breakfast was done, Wedge's datapad had still received no word from Tomer about appointments with the Perator for the purposes of diplomacy. Once again, the day was his. He asked Cherise to call ahead to the airbase and order Red Flight's Blade 32 aircraft to be loaded with weakened lasers and pigment cloud missiles, and to spread the word that Wedge Antilles might be accepting challenges this day, but only from fighters similarly equipped. The four pilots formed up and began a long loop around the broad tract of forest that Giltella Air Base had assigned for their training exercises.
"No challenges," Wedge said. "By this time yesterday, we'd had three or four of them at least."
"I don't think they're going to go for simulated weapons," Tycho said.
Wedge caught a new pattern of motion on his light board. Six blips incoming.
"Heads up, we have something."
A moment later, a new voice came across the comm board, a brassy one that rang in their ears.
"Strike the moon's flat knife. Issues greetings to New Republic Ratflat. And a challenge."
Wedge switched to general frequency.
"Captain, we accept your challenge. We accept four. Your choice."
Wedge had already learned about that protocol. If he didn't specify match numbers, the attackers could bring as many pilots as they wanted. The usual protocol was to accept as many challengers as he had pilots. Red Flight waited while the Strike the Moon's pilots chose among themselves. Two Blade 32s peeled away from the Kartan half-squad, and the other four fighters banked in the direction of Red Flight.
"Break by wings," Wedge said. "Fire at will."
He banked hard to starboard. Tycho tucked in behind him and waited to see how the enemy would react. All four enemy blades turned to follow Wedge and Tycho.
Wedge shook his head. That was an odd tactical choice. He said, "Let's give Wes and Hobby something to shoot at,"
and sent his blade into a steep dive, rotating so they had only a side angle on him. The four pursuers followed but did not rotate. Wedge opened laser fire against one of them and grinned. If he understood the simple Adumari light bounce system correctly, the bigger the metal cross-section it saw, the farther away it could get a good laser lock. In exposing their bellies to Jansen and Hobby, the four blades had substantially increased their cross-sections, which the two New Republic pilots should be seeing just about. He saw missile streaks appear like magic lines between Hobby's and Jansen's blades and two of the enemy craft. Pink clouds erupted, one an appalling pink, one a lavender, and one enemy blade emerged from each. Both the kills broke off from the fight, moving out to meet the two pilots sitting out the conflict. That left two. No, one. One of the remaining blades broke away to join the other kills. As it departed, it broadcast,
"Kamatana congratulates Antilles on a good start."
Wedge checked his sensor board. He must have racked up enough hits to put the enemy captain in the kill column. The surviving enemy blade came doggedly on after Wedge and Tycho. Wedge leveled off smoothly and switched his comm system back to Red Flight frequency.
"Let's try a simple one," he said. "Break to starboard and rejoin Wes and Hobby. I'll lead him back for a head-to-head against you."
"Done, boss."
Tycho broke away sharply. As Wedge expected, the pursuing blade paid him no heed, continuing on after Wedge. Wedge juked and jinked, though he saw his simulated laser damage climb to 30%, then to 35%. This pilot was a good shot. But his maneuvering pointed him back toward the other three members of Red Flight. As soon as his sensor board indicated that he could get a good shot at his own pilot, the blip that was the last enemy blade changed to a kill marker and circled off to rejoin its fellows.
"A good exercise, Strike the Moons," Wedge said.
"Care to go again?"
There was a noticeable delay before the enemy captain replied,
"Again? The duel is done."
"Yes, but nobody's a smoking crater. Do you want to do it again? Maybe let the two pilots who didn't go last time come against us now?"
There was still confusion in the captain's voice, but he said,
"We could do that."
And moments later, four blades, two that had taken part in the previous exercise and two that had not, came again against Red Flight.
Captain Kamatano sat opposite Wedge in the Giltella Air Base pilot's bar.
"The problem is not in your skills," Wedge said. "It's in your tactics. In every exchange, you kept your whole group together and went after the highest-profile enemy, me. You know what that makes you?"
Kamatano looked suspicious.
"Bad?"
"Well, I was going to say predictable."
Wedge leaned forward. But predictability in this case meant dead, so you're right.
But the greatest honor comes from killing the most prestigious enemy,
Komatinov said. No, Tycho said. That's the second greatest honor. The greatest honor comes from protecting those who are depending on you, which you can't do if you get yourself killed. Wedge nodded.
The question is, are you earning honor so that your loved ones can be proud of you as they stand over your grave, or so they can be proud of you when you come home at night?
He raised his brew glass to drain it, but was hit by a hollow feeling as his words came back on him. The question was merely an academic one to him. He had no one to come home to. To disguise his sudden feeling of disquiet, he went to the bar to get his brew glass refilled, leaving Tycho to continue the conversation.
In the days to come, Toma reported hearing rumors that the Parator and his ministers were drawing up a proposal for the formation of a world government, but Wedge's routine requests for an audience with the Parator to discuss diplomatic relations were met with routine refusals and apologies. So, each day, Wedge and Red Flight would return to the airbase and conduct training exercises with Adumari pilots. Each day, the kill numbers of General Turfanir and his 181st Fighter Group pilots climbed. According to Cherise, Fanir's popularity also rose above that of Wedge and the New Republic flyers.
"The Ampere pilots," she said, "show more affection for Kartan by doing things the Kartan way. How can the people of Kartan not respond with more affection?"
"By remembering the sons and daughters they've lost," Wedge suggested. The pilots' nightly activities usually involved accepting dinner invitations made by prominent politicians and pilots of Kartan. Wedge almost never saw Turfanir and the Imperial pilots at these dinners. There seemed to be a growing division among Kartan nobles. On one side, those who preferred the New Republic. On the other, those who preferred the Imperials. Increasingly, the more prestigious nobles seemed to extend their invitations to Turfanir rather than Wedge Antilles. Still, Wedge was not entirely displeased with the way things were shaping up. His informal flying school was actually proving to be a satisfying experience. Increasingly, pilots from both Kartan and foreign nations were discussing Wedge's philosophies as much as his tactics and skills, and doing so without contempt. One Kartan pilot, barely out of his teen years, a black-haired youth named Balas Karaza, finally summed it up in a way that pleased Wedge.
I understand, General. You are saying that a pilot's honor as internal, between him and his conscience, not external for his peers to see.
That's right, Wedge said. That's it exactly.
But if you do not externalize it, you cut yourself off from your nation, Ballas said. When you do wrong, your peers cannot bring you back in line by stripping away your honor, allowing you to regain it when you resume proper behavior.
True, Wedge said. But by the same token, a group of people can't redefine honor for their own benefit, or to achieve some private agenda, and then use it to control your actions. Troubled, the youth withdrew from the post-duel conversation and sat alone considering Wedge's words. And Wedge felt that he had at last achieved a dueling victory.
Returning from the airbase, the pilots paused before the door of their suite to give its security flat cams time to analyze their features. The door opened.
"Say, look who's here," Wedge said.
Hallis sat on an overinflated chair situated in one corner. She waved. Her recording unit, White Cap, said,
"Say, look who's here,"
in inimitable protocol unit tones. Wedge led his pilots in.
"What's with White Cap?" he asked.
"What's with Whitecap?"
Whitecap asked. Alice made a cross face.
Something's gone wrong in his hardware. I was recording some of General Fenir's challenge matches. When the pilots were leaving, the crowd got a bit unruly, and I was knocked down. Since then, Whitecap repeats back everything anyone says. I can't get him to stop."
"Get him to stop?"
Jansen grinned at her.
Some days make you just want to beat your heads against a wall, don't they?
Hobby said, maybe not. The young lady might not have her heads on straight after all.
Pilots, Alice said, how did I ever get this assignment? Who did I offend? Did I offend?
Still, she said, you'd better be nice to me. I know you don't take me seriously, but you ought to. Wedge sprawled on a sofa-like piece of furniture.
Alice, it would be easier if you didn't look like something out of a tale to frighten children.
To frighten children?
All right, she said.
She pulled her goggles off and set them aside. Then she reached up to press a control on Whitecap's clamp. She caught the recording unit as it pitched forward, then moved across the room to set it within a cabinet. She closed the cabinet door with an irritated thump.
Better?
Wedge tried to make his tone neutral, non-judgmental.
What is it, Alice? Someone rappelled down to your balcony today from an upper story. I think he was doing something to your X-wings.
In moments, they were out on the balcony looking over their snub fighters.
Alice followed and slid the main door to the balcony shut behind her. I lied, she said. I wanted to get you out on the balcony. There aren't any listening devices out here.
She straightened.
I came by here this morning, but you'd already gone. As I was leaving, I saw someone headed toward your door. I followed him in and hid while he went from room to room. He seemed to be checking up on emplaced items, almost certainly transmitters. Then, when he left, I followed him. He went into a room on the third floor.
That's good work, Wedge said. We'll have to find out whose quarters those are and start tracing some connections. Thank you, Alice. From the corner of his eye, Wedge saw Charisse appear at the transparent door to the pilot's balcony. She waved, but didn't come through, sensitive, doubtless, to the fact that she might not yet be welcome. But a second later, Tomer Darpin brushed past her, slid the door open, and emerged onto the balcony, his expression dark. He said,
"This has to stop."
Wedge eyed Tomer.
"What has to stop?"
"All this business with your duels. What is this nonsense with simulated weapons?"
"A simple way to give the Adamari the encounters they obviously want so much, without getting them killed. Or me. Or my pilots."
Tomer rolled exasperated eyes toward the balcony above. "General Antilles, you're changing things. There are now Adamari pilots, famous pilots, talking about doing more sim weapon exercises."
"Good!
You're not here to change things. You're here to gain their respect according to their culture, and to demonstrate that they should throw in with the New Republic."
"Meaning what? Meaning that I should stop doing duels?"
"No. That would cost you the respect you've earned in their eyes."
"Or start doing live weapon duels."
Tomer was silent.
"That's it, isn't it? You think I should go up in the skies day after day and shoot down eager Adamari pilots?"
"That's what Terfenir and his men are doing."
Wedge felt cold anger creep through his guts. When he spoke again, his voice was quiet.
"If we act like the Empire, we become the Empire. And then even if we defeat the Empire, we've still lost. Because the Empire is once again in control, just with a new name and with new faces printed on the crit notes."
Tomer shook his head. "You're going to lose Adumar for us with your naivete. You're just going to have to fall in line."
He heaved a regretful sigh.
"General Antilles, that constitutes an order."
"You don't give me orders, Darpin."
"No, of course not."
Tomer shrugged, apology on his face.
"These are orders from the Regional Director of Intelligence."
"Who is the Regional Director of Intelligence?"
Tomer shook his head.
"I can't tell you that. He, or she, likes to maintain anonymity."
Wedge offered him a frosty smile.
"Well, I received my initial orders from General Kraken. And they didn't say anything about being answerable to one of his subordinates. When I get a message from Kraken telling me to do what you've just said, I will, of course, comply. Until then, not a chance." "I think I need a drink."
"Oh, good," Jansen said.
"Alone."
Inside the suite, Charisse asked, "Do you want a brew tap? Where you will be recognized and mobbed?
You would be unrecognized. And do you want one with entertainments or shadowy corners?
Unrecognized, Wedge told her. Shadows.
Garms on the downstream, she said. Hold on.
She reached into the closet off the main room and brought something over to Wedge. A lavender face mask, made to cover its wearer from upper lip to forehead. He put it on and put up the hood of his cloak. The booths in Garum's on the downstream were all full at this hour, so Wedge took a chair at the bar, in the most shadowy corner. He nursed a brew and watched these people of Kartan. He pondered their fates and his own. It was a simple question, really. If Adumar were magically to pull a world government from its sleeve, and all Wedge had to do to entice that government to join the new republic was fight a few pilots who were anxious to duel him to the death, could he refuse? No, there was a second question. If Adumar joined the new republic, who would be the better for it? If he was to be honest with himself, Wedge had to admit that it would probably do the new republic no harm. Visitors from other worlds to Adumar would probably not get caught up in the dueling mania, while Adumari pilots joining the new republic military were very likely to have their perspectives broadened by what they experienced out in the galaxy. So, that answered the second question. Bringing Adumar into the new republic would do no harm, and would offer the potential for increased proton torpedo production. Which left the first question. If the way to bring Adumar in involved some duels, live fire, not simulated, could Wedge do it? Wedge wrestled with that one. If General Kraken supported the local intelligence head's orders, mandating that Wedge begin the slaughter of Adumari pilot duelists, what would he do? No matter how he thought his way around the problem, the answer always came back. To do this would be to dishonor myself and my uniform. I would refuse those orders. With that finally came another thought. Which means I would have to face court-martial or resign my commission. Wedge suddenly found himself short of breath. It wasn't the thought of losing his rank that hit him. It was the realization that leaving the military would be the same as abandoning what little remained of his life. His home system, Corellia, was closed to him. Joining the Rebel Alliance had put him on the enemies list of the Corellian Diktat. His family was gone, parents dead, and sister missing for long years. Almost everyone he knew was associated with New Republic military. If he resigned, most of these people would disappear completely from his life, leaving him as alone as a pilot who ejected into space with no hope of rescue. The bleakness of that vision settled as a chill upon him. It was all the more frightening because he knew that even in the face of what it would cost him, he would have to refuse orders insisting that he do things Tomer's way. If he didn't, he might as well be Turfinir, flying for the Empire. Had a decision like that cost him the friendship of Yella Wasiri?
He didn't know. But on the eve of perhaps losing what was left of his life, he resolved to see her and find out.
Yes, another. And this time, a bit stronger.
It wasn't the words that attracted Wedge's attention, but the accent, the clipped, precise tones of Coruscant, or of a dozen worlds that emulated the former Imperial Throne world.
Within a nearby booth, its flap held open for the moment by a bartender, was a man in dark, somber Adumari dress. His hair was gray, his features sharp. They'd never met in person, but Wedge had seen that face on recorded transmissions. 5 years ago, Admiral Terran Rogris had surreptitiously aided Han Solo's task force, pursuing the warlord Zinj. As Han Solo's opposite number, chief of the Imperial Task Force hunting Zinj, Rogris had risked charges of treason by cooperating with the New Republic, commanding an Interdictor-class cruiser in collaboration with Solo's task force. Later, he'd led the Imperial effort to win back territories left disorganized by Zinj's death. When the bartender hurried off, Wedge rose. He parted the flap covering the booth and slid into the empty seat. The gray-headed man offered him a cool smile.
I have a blaster trained on you,
he said.
Perhaps you'd better leave.
You'd do the Empire a big favor by pulling the trigger, Wedge said.
Admiral Rogris.
The man frowned.
I know that voice. Is it you, Antilles?
Wedge raised his mask. Rogris brought his pistol up and set it on the tabletop.
I'd never shoot you,
he said.
Not even for the bounty on your head. I want to see how you get out of this mess you're in. Or, more likely, how you fail.
What's a much-decorated Imperial Fleet Commander doing on a backwater mission like this? Wedge asked.
Rogris offered him a half-smile.
Fleet Commander no more, General. Battling with Warlord Teradoc and your Admiral Akbar for Warlord Zinj's leavings, I fared rather poorly. I remain an admiral, but with just one ship under my command, the Agonizer.
An Imperial Star Destroyer, Wedge said.
So Rogris's ship had to be the counterpart of the Allegiance orbiting Adumar.
That's still prestigious.
Admiral, have you ever wondered why the Emperor gave such nasty names to his Star Destroyers?
Executor, Agonizer, Iron Fist, Venom? I've heard every schoolboy theory ever proposed on that matter.
This one comes from Luke Skywalker.
Having exhausted the schoolboys, we now turn to the farm boys. How charming.
Who has a certain perspective on the matter? The rest of us don't. He thinks it all has to do with corruption, with the seduction of the not-too-unwilling.
Rogris gestured for him to keep speaking, but his expression suggested that he'd heard it all before. Wedge continued. Put a man or woman in a situation where the actions he's obliged to take, such as serving Emperor Palpatine, are a certain path to personal corruption. Fill his ears with words saying that his actions are honorable ones, but surround him with constant reminders of the wrongness of what he's doing. The symbols, such as the names of ships he commands, won't let him forget. He's always aware of his descent, of his slow transference to the dark side. Skywalker thinks the Emperor found this half-accepting, half-struggling process particularly delicious.
Rogris pointed his finger at Wedge. You rebels remain so very self-righteous,
he said.
Always speaking of honor as though you invented the concept. I've spent my whole life in honorable conflict. I've conquered worlds to bring civilization to them, literacy and medicine and sanitation and discipline, only to be lectured about honor by someone a generation younger than I am. That's reward for you.
You're here wrestling with a question of honor, aren't you?
Wedge was speculating madly, but the fact that honor seemed to be such a sore point with Rogris made his wild shot more likely to strike home.
What about you?
I was, Wedge admitted. I solved it. And you?
Rogris drew himself up stiffly.
Where duty is clear, there is no question about honor.
Wedge laughed.
I wish that were so.
Well,
I'll leave you to keep wrestling. Best of luck, Admiral.
He rose and departed. An hour later, Wedge and Jansen were sitting in a small conference office on the Allegiance. Wedge gestured at Jansen's datapad.
What have you got on Rogris?
Jansen sighed. Wife dead, two children surviving. Daughter Asori, 28. Son Tarek, 24, in the Imperial Navy.
You're talking about Rogris?
Captain Saliban entered the conference room.
That's right, Wedge said. We're trying to figure out what his commanders might have called on him to do that would send him to some shadowy bar to get belligerent on the subject of honor.
Saliban shrugged.
Well, there's going to be a fight here. Allegiance against Agonizer.
Wedge gave him a curious look.
How do you figure? If you win over the Adumari, it's a certainty that the imps will break their word. They'll call in additional ships and attack both the Adumari and the Allegiance. And we are in for one serious furball.
Wedge said, Wait. What word will the imps break?
Saliman put on an expression of annoyance.
Shortly after you notified us that the imps were here, a representative of the Kartan government visited.
He said that in order to ensure the honorable continuance of these negotiations, the government would have to offer its words of honor that if Adumar decided for the Empire, we'd leave system within the hour, and not return except under formal banners of truce or war. And did they get these assurances? Saliban nodded. The agreement is two-way. I just expect the Empire not to honor their word.
That's it, Wedge said. Like you, Rogris is at the center of that word of honor, and he expects the Empire not to stand by it. But his personal impulse is to do what he's sworn to do.
Well, it begs a question, Saliban shrugged. If my opposite number is honorable enough to feel some shreds of guilt as he breaks a promise, so what?
It's a fluctuation gap in their shields, Wedge said. A weakness the imps may not be aware of in their plan to take Adumar.
I ought to forward these little notions to General Kraken. Set me up for a holocam transmission, would you?
Saliban shook his head.
We're in a communications blackout. All messages have to be cleared through the local intelligence head before being sent on. Record what you want, and I'll put it through his office for review.
Wedge kept a smile on his face, though his mood had just gone dark again.
Never mind. Some other time.
He rose.
Come on, Wes. Back to Kartan. Thanks, Captain.
In the corridor, Wedge said, When you found out Yella's Kartan identity, did you get her address? Jansen nodded. I need to see her. Tonight. Yella's building was a shadowy five-story rectangle with a single entrance, no security station, no building guards. Signaling for Jansen to wait behind in the dimly lit corridor, Wedge knocked on her door. The door burst open and Wedge found Yella facing him, blaster pistol in hand. After closing the door behind her, Yella said,
Wedge, you can't be here. You'll compromise my identity.
Her tone was pleading, not angry. I need your help, Wedge said. Help I can't get from channels. She sat at one end of a sofa. He remained standing.
I need access to a holocam unit. I know you're under direct orders from your superior not to permit any communications with the New Republic without his review. I'm asking you to break those orders.
A touch of distress worked through her guarded expression.
Maybe you'd better explain that.
All right. First, I know that your boss, the regional head of New Republic Intelligence, is Tomer Darpin. I'm not trying to wring some sort of admission out of you, Yella. This is just something I figured out, eventually. Darpin has spoken on behalf of the local intelligence head as if he were privy to his thoughts. He issues me orders and expects me to follow them, meaning that he's either very stupid or very used to having his orders obeyed, both out of keeping with the sort of role he's playing. So I conclude that Darpin is not just a diplomat, but also a major player with intelligence. Anyway, he came to me today and ordered me to stop doing my sim weapons training with Adumari pilots. I'm usually pretty good about taking orders, but only when there's a clear chain of command. My fear is that he's going to get in touch with General Kraken and get confirmation of his orders, but in such a way that Kraken is not aware of what it means.
Yella nodded. So you want to give Kraken the complete picture?
Yes.
She sighed. Wedge, what you're asking me to do is deliberate disobedience of direct orders. I can't. I'm sorry. Is there anything else I can help you with?
Yes.
Stirring from his momentary depression, Wedge faced her.
Admiral Rogris is in command of the Agonizer. I need a way to get in touch with him without alerting his subordinates, or our people.
Her eyebrows went up. Better not let my superior hear about that. He'll think you're conspiring with the enemy.
I hope very much to conspire with the enemy. Can you do it?
I think so. It may take some time. Anything else?
No,
he sighed.
Wait. Yes, there is. Yella, if General Kraken orders me to play Turfaneer's game with the aerial duels, I'll refuse. I'll resign my commission.
He saw her jaw drop.
When I do that, I'll have to start over from the ground up. New career, new friends.
new world, maybe even a new name. Since I'm on the verge of losing everything, I really need to find out how I lost something earlier. I need to know how I lost your regard.
She stared at him. Finally, she shook her head and said, "It's not like that. It's nothing you did. It's something I did." Her expression lost all self-assurance.
"Wedge, let's not do this now." "When?" "Yella, we can't do it when I'm a civilian, being shipped back to Coruscant in disgrace. Now's the time."
He slid toward her, the knot in his throat threatening to cut off his speech altogether.
"Please. Because we were friends. Tell me how we stopped. Was it my relationship with Kui?"
A flicker of pain crossed her face.
"No. Yes. It's related to that."
Her words were a long time in coming.
"When Derek died, you and Corin were there for me, and when I gradually got better, you didn't wander away. It wasn't a, 'You're all fine now, so it's back to work for me.' I can't tell you what that meant to me. And gradually, I began to wonder..."
She was silent for long moments.
"If maybe there was a chance for you and me."
He gave her a nod.
"I had those same thoughts. But I told myself it's too soon to be thinking about that. I told myself that for a long time. Looking back on it after a while, I don't suppose you could have thought I was still interested in you. We became just pals. And one day there she was, Guizouk's, hanging off your arm. And I realized I'd waited too long. It hurt every time I saw you, knowing that I'd thrown away my opportunity. And you can't be friends with someone who cuts out your heart, even unintentionally, every time you run into him."
"You know, we're not together anymore, Kui and I."
She nodded, but her expression did not lighten.
"And?" "And what? And she's gone? And so maybe we can start all over again?"
Surprised by the heat and anger in her voice, Wedge drew back.
"So what you're saying is that I hurt you so badly that we can never be anything to one another again?" "I suppose that is what I'm saying."
Yella looked on the verge of tears.
"I'm sorry, Wedge, I am. But I think you'd better leave."
"It's not leaving that's hard anymore," he said, scarcely recognizing his own voice. "It's finding somewhere to go."
He turned toward the door.
Adrenaline jolted through him. The shock that hit him was that of a man realizing that he was about to step into a trap or a firefight, something that could end his life in a second. But in this instance, the danger was more personal. It was indeed a matter of step through that door and your life is over, but in a very different way than in combat. "Just how stupid do you think I am?" he asked.
He turned to face her again.
"How big an idiot would I have to be to walk out that door?" "I don't understand, Wedge. I just wish you'd go."
"Yes. It would be easier that way. Less risk of humiliation."
He moved to stand before her again.
"Now listen. It took me a while to understand just how much I need you to be in my life, as my friend, and more than my friend, for good. Now you tell me it can't happen because of mistakes. I made some, you made some. And now our chances are all behind us?"
He shook his head vehemently.
"No, Yella. That would be another mistake. And the older we get, the less time we have to bounce back from them. I'm tired of making mistakes. You can't just tell me to go, not this time. I love you. I'm not going to meekly walk away."
He put one hand behind her neck and gently pulled her face to his and kissed her. He could have tensed against the impact he was sure would follow, but he did not. If this was to be the last kiss he was to have from her, he wanted to enjoy every millisecond of it. And the milliseconds stretched to full seconds, and her arms snaked around his neck and held him tight. Finally, it was a need for oxygen that forced him to break their kiss. He held her tight, looking into eyes that were wide, but not alarmed, lips that were curved ever so slightly into an enigmatic smile. "So, this is the cockpit, Wedge," she said. "The one the enemy has boxed in, and suddenly he snaps and changes all the rules."
"That's me."
"It's very becoming." She kissed him, her voice a whisper against his mouth. "What you said before about being in your life for good sounded a lot like a proposal."
"Let me make it formal."
Wedge pulled back to adopt a traditional pose, but Yella didn't release him.
"Later," she said. "After Adumar.
Let's just say for now that I'm willing to stop making mistakes if you are."
"It's a deal."
He supposed she wanted to hear the words in surroundings less alien, in times less stressful. "But you need to understand something. No matter what a great leader you may be, intelligence doesn't take orders from Starfighter Command."
"Or the other way around."
"I can live with that." She kissed him again.
When Wedge finally left Yella's quarters, Jansen moved out from his hiding position to join him. Jansen was not graceful going down the stairs. One of his knees tended to pop, and his posture was stiff.
"You're getting old, Wes."
"I am not old. I'm stiff from waiting for hours in that stupid corner. Did you get what you wanted from Yella?"
Wedge turned a surprised face toward Jansen.
"What?"
"The holocom access to General Kraken. Did she say you could?"
"Oh, that. No."
Wedge felt his smile return.
"You're acting very strangely, Chief." "Come on this way." Jansen tugged Wedge in the direction of their quarters. "Something odd happened during the night. In the darkest, quietest hours, I thought I heard breathing. I think someone was spying."
"Well, you should have introduced yourself."
Wedge moved over to the street curb and walked along its very edge, balancing like a high-wire walker.
"Wedge, stop acting like a kid. You're embarrassing me."
Wedge had been asleep in his quarters for 5 minutes when he became aware of a noise from the main room. Tomer Darpin was speaking in a voice loud enough to awaken sleepers on the floors immediately above and below.
"Very promising indeed, but we need to be there with our best faces on."
He caught sight of Wedge.
"General, excellent news. We've received word from the Peritus Palace that they'll be making an announcement this morning on the subject of the formation of a world government. Be ready and at the Peritus Palace in an hour, please."
"We'll be ready,"
Wedge said.
When Tomer was gone, Wedge turned to his pilots. "Dress uniforms, please."
They groaned.
"This is an official diplomatic function. From now on, at all such functions, it's dress uniforms. Issue blasters and vibroblades, but no blast swords. We're not Adumari, and it's time to stop legitimizing their bad behavior. We won't emulate them in any way."
Wedge clapped his hands together.
"Let's go, people."
"Great," Hobby said. "Who brought the old Wedge out of retirement?"